Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio here in East County. As Democrats close out their arguments in the Senate impeachment trial of President Donald Trump, a tape has surfaced indicating the president demanded that the U.S. ambassador to the Ukraine be taken out, while a second report suggests the White House told senators that if they voted for impeachment, their heads would be on spikes. We will have details on these disturbing potential threats of violence on today's show. In other national news, on the 10th anniversary of the Supreme Court's ruling in Citizens United that allowed vast sums of dark money in campaigns, Public News Service reports that the Senate is blocking a House bill calling for a constitutional amendment that would overturn Citizens United. In our health report, a potentially dangerous new variation of the coronavirus, first discovered last month in Wuhan, China, has now spread to numerous countries, including the U.S., while the Chinese government has shut down several major cities in an effort to quarantine 25 million people, also canceling Chinese Lunar New Year celebrations. Find out what you should know about this new fast-spreading virus on today's show. We'll also have an update on the 2020 election campaigns shaping up the presidential primary in Iowa shortly before Californians go to the polls in March. In local news, learn how you can submit questions for all four candidates running for county supervisor to represent East County in a forum on January 29th hosted by East County Magazine and the Grossmont Mount Helix Improvement Association in La Mesa. Then on People Power, hear about Reverend Shane Harris' successful efforts to collect information on former foster youths who are homeless in order to bring about change and help for these young people. On Crime Beat, a La Mesa store owner is under arrest for battery after attacking several members of the media, all caught on video. He is also charged with felony destruction of property and lewd acts in public. A $10,000 reward is being offered for information to help find Elijah Diaz, known as Bear, a young El Cajon man who has been missing since 2015 under suspicious circumstances. San Diego supervisors have voted to continue to welcome refugees from around the world as well as federal funds to help these newcomers to America. In Santee, hantavirus has been found in mice. Learn how to stay safe from this potentially deadly illness on today's show. The Santee Library is now offering laptops you can check out from a kiosk, and in El Cajon, the superintendent of the Grossmont Union High School District spoke out at a Cajon Valley Union School District meeting, blasting its board for a proposal to open a charter high school in the Grossmont District, reportedly without adequate notice. We'll also have details on La Mesa's new ban on smoking in public places, including sidewalks and most outdoor eating areas. Finally, on Destination East County, hear about festive events coming up across our region, including our very own benefit event for East County Magazine through our East County Dining Club. You're invited to our flamenco show with Spanish paella and tapas at the Space Bar Cafe and Wine Bar in La Mesa on Thursday, January 30th. Other events coming up include a Native American powwow at Cuyamaca College, Hawk Watch in Ramona, top talent including the comedian Sinbad at the Magnolia Center in El Cajon, and more. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Capitol Report. As Democrats wrapped up their arguments for removing President Trump from office during the Senate impeachment trial this week, Republicans controlling the Senate have thus far refused to allow new witnesses to be called. The White House continues to defy requests for public records. Now, CBS News reports that a confidant of President Trump told CBS that senators were warned, quote, "Vote against the president and your head will be on a pike." Such a threat, if true, could amount to witness tampering and threatening federal officials with violence. In addition, MSNBC reports hearing a tape in which Trump demands that Marie Yovanovitch, the former ambassador to Ukraine, be removed, although whether he was calling for her firing or assassination is not clear. "Get rid of her," demands the voice that sounds like Trump, according to ABC. "Get her out tomorrow. I don't care. Get her out tomorrow. Take her out, okay? Do it." The recording was allegedly made during a 2018 dinner party with Lev Parnas. That's a former associate of Trump's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani. Parnas' attorney, Joe Bondi, has issued a statement which says of the recording, which he indicated was not released by his client, "It is yet another example of Mr. Parnas' version of events being corroborated by evidence in the form of recordings, emails, and text messages." Trump has used the phrase "take out" when he referred to his order to kill Iranian General Qassem Soleimani, who was killed by a U.S. airstrike in Iraq. Trump, who formerly starred in The Apprentice game show, famously used the phrase "you're fired" when referring to terminating a job. Trump has also claimed he did not know Parnas at all. Now a tape indicating he not only knew Parnas, but may have discussed the firing or killing of a U.S. ambassador in Parnas' presence, is reigniting Democrats' calls for new witnesses, including the president himself, who has so far refused to testify or authorized any of his White House staff or cabinet members to do so. A poll, by the way, by Reuters, showed that 72% of Americans polled, including the vast majority of both Republicans and Democrats, now say that witnesses should be called. Congressman Adam Schiff, who put forth Democrats' arguments to impeach Trump on abuse of power and obstruction of Congress charges, on Friday indicated he is prepared to ask Chief Justice John Roberts to rule on issues of evidence and executive privilege claimed by the president. Schiff said in a press conference Friday, "You cannot use executive privilege to hide wrongdoing or criminality or impeachable misconduct, and that is exactly the purpose for which they seek to use it." Next week, the White House will present its defense in the impeachment hearing.
Corporations and their trade associations have poured almost $1 billion, by some estimates, into American elections since the U.S. Supreme Court handed down its Citizens United decision 10 years ago next Tuesday. The court decision freed companies to make unlimited political donations without declaring the true sources of what's come to be known as dark money. Robert Weissman, president of the good government watchdog group Public Citizen, says that has led to a system rigged to benefit the super rich.
The top 25 donors are responsible for nearly half of all the individual contributions that have gone to super PACs since the Citizens United decision. So we really are looking at an oligarchic situation.
Weissman says that means issues that enjoy wide public support, like bills to prevent gun violence, lower prescription drug prices, or fight climate change, have languished in Congress as many lawmakers depend on funds from the gun lobby and drug and energy companies. Supporters of the decision say it allows all corporations to have a voice in the political process, not just the ones with media empires. Senate Democrats have introduced a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United, and the Democrat-controlled House of Representatives passed the For the People Act to reform the rules on political donations. But Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has refused to allow a vote, calling the bills a ploy to get more Democrats elected. Maryland Congressman John Sarbanes says the House bill would be a shot in the arm for democracy.
It requires a disclosure of where this dark money is coming from. It puts a cop on the beat by strengthening the Federal Election Commission. It puts new rules in place with respect to lobbyists and super PAC and other measures.
The bill also would reform the campaign finance system, allowing candidates to get matching funds for small donor donations, thus diluting the influence of special interests. In 2018, California passed the Disclose Act, which requires ads from independent political committees to prominently display their primary funders. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
A new form of the coronavirus, first identified in December in Wuhan, China, a city of 11 million people, is rapidly spreading across the globe, including the first U.S. case diagnosed in a traveler in Washington State this week who is hospitalized in an isolation unit. A second case is confirmed in Illinois. A traveler through Los Angeles International Airport has been isolated, and another in Texas undergoing testing after arriving from China with symptoms of the disease. China has shut down travel, including planes, trains, buses, and ferries, among several major cities, including Beijing and Wuhan, attempting to quarantine 25 million people, the Washington Post reports. Guan Yi, a virologist who helped identify the severe acute respiratory syndrome, or SARS, outbreak in 2003, says the epidemic of this newly discovered virus could be 10 times bigger than the SARS outbreak. Comparing it to past outbreaks of other viruses, Guan said, "This time, I'm petrified," the Washington Post reports. To date, the new coronavirus has been confirmed in China, the U.S., Thailand, Japan, Taiwan, Hong Kong, Singapore, Vietnam, Macau, Saudi Arabia, and South Korea. Officially, Chinese officials report 835 people infected and at least 26 dead, though experts indicate the number of cases is probably much higher. In the U.S., all flights from Wuhan are being routed through 5 airports in Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York, Chicago, and Atlanta, where all passengers are being screened for the disease. The Lunar New Year holiday, a week-long celebration starting January 25th, is when millions of Chinese travel to their hometowns and back, potentially spreading the disease far and wide. The Chinese government has canceled Lunar New Year celebrations and large public gatherings in 2020, the year of the rat. Besides Wuhan, the cities of Huanggang and Yizhou are on lockdown, with anyone inside these cities prohibited from leaving, although news reports indicate some have defied the ban. The Forbidden City, the ancient imperial palace in Beijing, has shut its doors temporarily due to the outbreak. In Wuhan, Olympic qualifying matches have been moved elsewhere and school classes have been delayed. The government of Macau, after a disease was diagnosed there, reported it may close casinos down in a gambling district 7 times bigger than Las Vegas. The World Health Organization reports 25% are severe cases. The mortality or death rate currently is 3%, primarily among older people, but medical experts warn it is too early to predict the percentage of cases that will result in fatalities. There is no cure or vaccine currently, although the Moderna company has announced it received a grant to start developing a vaccine, a process that will not come quickly enough to control the current outbreak. The first cases were among people who visited the Huanan Seafood Market in Wuhan, but new cases have been diagnosed in people who never went to the market. Though the virus is believed to have originated in animals, health experts now believe it is being transmitted from person to person via sneezing, coughing, or touching surfaces that are contaminated with the virus. The World Health Organization stopped short of declaring a global emergency this week, saying it's too early, although the situation in China is considered an epidemic. Another worry is that communist Chinese officials, under criticism, and with the economy threatened by the outbreak of a dangerous new disease, have begun censoring negative news about the epidemic. Several posts have been deleted, including one by Wuhan Railway stating that 300,000 people traveled by train out of Wuhan on Wednesday across China, and another by the Wuhan Health Commission on its struggle to contain the outbreak. Yet another post reporting a shortage of masks in the Wuhan province has also reportedly been deleted. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control have asked doctors in the U.S. to watch for patients who recently traveled to or near Wuhan and who have a fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. Other symptoms include runny nose and headache. Anyone who is ill after traveling to the Wuhan area or coming in contact with someone who may have should contact a health care provider. Cases of the Wuhan coronavirus can only be diagnosed with lab testing. Incubation can take up to 2 weeks after exposure before symptoms occur. To reduce your risk of catching this or other viruses, wash your hands frequently. If ill, cover your mouth when coughing and stay home to avoid contaminating others. Wearing a mask may reduce your risk of contagion, though it's not yet certain how effective masks are with this emerging virus. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 election process from the studios of KHOI in the heart of Iowa.
We're grassroots people, and we've been on the ground.
Tom Steyer's a billionaire and an activist. He founded NextGen America in 2013 to get young people involved in politics and registered to vote. And he's been working the campaign trail hard. Former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg is the other Democratic primary billionaire. He spent $248 million on radio, TV, and digital ads, according to Politico, over $100 million more than Steyer. And each has spent far more than all the other Democratic hopefuls combined. Other candidates and voters, too, worry about the impact of big money on elections.
I watched the news this morning. There was like 10 commercials political commercials, none of them paid for by somebody running for president, paid for by somebody else.
Iowan Roger Brown posed a question to Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren when she was in Iowa last week.
So these companies and these people who are influencing our little bit of information that we're going to get to make a decision on you today have the money to put in there to give me doubt about you. So how do you change that process so the money stops trying to influence my perception of you?
Warren's response.
The one thing that beats a TV ad, the one thing that beats a Facebook ad, the one thing that beats fake news is you. It's you. It's the face-to-face. It's the handshake.
But four candidates are stuck in D.C. for the Senate impeachment trial and can't shake hands or come face-to-face with voters.
If the only way you can get to be the Democratic nominee for president of the United States is either be a billionaire or suck up to billionaires, then watch out, because we're going to have an America that works better and better for billionaires and worse for everyone else.
Bloomberg isn't accepting any contributions from potential voters. The Center for Responsive Politics, Brandon Quinn, has a warning.
It's very rare that a candidate who almost completely self-funds their campaign finds success, because they're not really interacting with the base that would be their donors and also their voters.
Quinn says Steyer's model, self-funding combined with outside fundraising, can work. Last cycle, President Trump contributed $66 million of his own money to his total of over $300 million. It's showing in South Carolina, where Steyer's in second place. After spending around $12 million on TV ads, he's putting in the FaceTime to try and make it stick.
We have a lot of momentum right now. You know, the polls have been getting a lot better in the early states. More people show up, and then people hear that the numbers are going up. And so they realize, oh my God, this guy can really win.
Steyer and other candidates not in the Senate are showing up in Iowa, where Andrew Yang is set to appear today with former candidate Marianne Williamson. She's not officially endorsing Yang, but she wants to help him get through the early primaries. From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Bolke. Thanks for listening at pacificanetwork.org and publicnewsservice.org.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
This is Jonathan Getz, a forum for candidates running for San Diego County Supervisor in District 2, which includes most of East County, will be held on Wednesday, January 29th at Murdoch Elementary School in La Mesa. The forum is sponsored by the Grossmont Mount Helix Improvement Association and East County Magazine. All four candidates running for the East County seat have indicated they will attend. The candidates are former State Senator Joel Anderson, Poway Mayor Steve Voss, Kenya Taylor, co-chair of the Southeastern Live Well Center Health Work Group, and Brian Sesko, a broker and general contractor. The candidates are running to fill the seat that will be vacated by Supervisor Diane Jacob, who will be leaving office after 28 years because of term limits. You can submit questions for the candidates by emailing questions to editor@eastcountymagazine.org or to yourgmianeighbor@gmail.com. Written questions will also be accepted at the forum. Kathleen Hedberg, president of the GMIA, says, "The role of our supervisor is critical to our unincorporated region. The unincorporated area does not have a city council and is governed by decisions made by the Board of Supervisors, which can have a tremendous impact on our area," she adds. Miriam Raftery, the editor of East County Magazine, says, "County supervisors make decisions that affect people across our region, including major land use decisions on housing developments, energy projects, sand mine proposals, parks, preserves, and more. Supervisors also cast votes that impact countywide fire protection, health and human services, homelessness, agriculture, and many other important issues. The second supervisorial district includes 620,000 residents and spans 2,000 square miles from the eastern communities in the city of San Diego, east to the Imperial County line, south to the Mexican border, and north through Julian and Santa Isabel. It encompasses five incorporated cities, as well as rural, mountain, and desert towns, plus several Native American reservations. The event begins at 5:30 p.m. with an opportunity to meet the candidates. The forum, which will be moderated by the League of Women Voters, starts at 6 p.m. After the forum ends at 8 p.m., candidates for Superior Court judge seats and the 71st and 79th Assembly District have also been invited for a meet and greet with those attending. You can find full details on the January 29th Candidate Forum at eastcountymagazine.org in our politics section.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
Reverend Shane Harris, a former foster care youth in San Diego, is emerging as a powerful voice for documenting and improving conditions for foster kids and those who have aged out of the foster care system. He recalls turning 18 and being instantly homeless. He has stated, "They dropped me off at B Street in downtown San Diego with an emancipation letter and one bag of clothes." That wasn't his first time being homeless, however. Harris entered foster care at age 8, lost both of his parents, and ran away from one foster home, winding up sleeping on the streets and couches of friends for several months. Now he wants to spare other young people from suffering similar ordeals. This month, San Diego County supervisors unanimously approved the appointment of Harris to the San Diego County Child and Family Strengthening Advisory Board. Supervisor Kristen Gaspar, who made the appointment, calls Reverend Harris a fierce advocate for foster youth in our county and across the nation addressing issues of disproportionality. And she adds, there is no better person to serve in this role. Just one day after his appointment, on January 15th, Harris and the People's Alliance for Justice, which he founded and leads as president, announced a partnership with the San Diego Regional Task Force on the Homeless. The partnership will make San Diego the first city in the nation to survey the homeless and find out how many have been in foster care. The nationally known civil rights activist is also calling on Ben Carson, Secretary of U.S. Housing and Urban Development, or HUD, to add this as an initiative to HUD's platform nationally. The annual homeless count done by the San Diego Regional Task Force on the Homeless in 2017 here found 2% of youths contacted said they became homeless because they had turned 18 and aged out of foster care. But Reverend Harris thinks the number is far higher. So in the 2020 count, data is being collected not only during the point-in-time homeless survey that's done in a single night, but also at various sites frequented by foster and former foster youths across our region. A similar study of homeless veterans led to a specialized approach to help them that resulted in a 43% decrease in homeless vets since 2011, according to the National Alliance to End Homelessness. Harris suggests changes such as making transitional housing available immediately to foster youths turning 18 and raising the age limit for foster children to be eligible for county housing aid are two possible solutions. Nationwide, there are about 437,000 youths in foster care, according to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, including about 7,000 young people in San Diego, according to county records. African Americans, or blacks, are disproportionately represented in the foster care system. Nationally, although blacks account for about 15% of the U.S. population, 32% of foster care children are black, the People's Alliance for Justice reports. And locally, 5% of San Diego County's population is black, but 17% of foster youths here are black. The foster care system has dismal outcomes for many young people. Only half of all foster children graduate from high school or obtain a GED. Just 15% of foster youths attend college, and less than 3% earn a degree. Of those working full-time, most are in low-wage jobs at or near minimum wage. 25% of youths aged out of foster care wind up homeless at least once. Foster care youths are diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD, at a rate 6 times higher than the general population and double the rate of returning war veterans. 25% of kids in foster care will be in prison within 2 years after leaving the foster care system. 80% of inmates in prisons have been in foster care. And according to the NAACP, 32% of prisoners are black, and they are imprisoned at a rate 5 times higher than whites, in part due to disparities in a criminal justice system that is more apt to imprison a person of color than a white person who commits the same crime. The Congressional Research Service reports that the majority of extended foster care youths have at least one chronic or acute medical or mental health condition that needs treatment. Many local teens aging out of foster care have received no job training and are not enrolled in programs such as CalFresh, CalWORKS, or Guardian Scholars, even if they're eligible. And of 18-year-olds surveyed locally who aged out of foster care, nearly 1 in 5 had a child or children of their own. Reverend Shane Harris wants to change those troubling outcomes for foster care children. He's been leading workshops around the region to draw attention to the needs of foster care kids and those aging out of the system. He sums up his efforts to reform the foster care system this way. It's about making the government a better parent. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
A La Mesa store owner has been arrested for battery and felony vandalism after attacking several reporters and destroying a camera valued at $7,000. Peter Karzis, owner of Peter's Men's Apparel, is also accused of lewd acts in public. On January 18th, a video posted on Twitter showed what appeared to be Karzis fondling a woman straddled across his lap on the street outside his store. The Twitter video sparked public outrage, and detectives have indicated that they want to talk to any potential victims of sexual misconduct by Karzis. The recent incidents aren't the first time that Karzis has been accused of inappropriate behavior. Several other women have posted comments on Yelp claiming he touched them inappropriately or made crude comments. One woman posted a video and still photos of Karzis clutching his crotch and shouting at her. Superior Court records indicate that 3 civil lawsuits have been filed in the past against Peter Karzis, including harassment cases in 2013 and 2015. There are also 2 criminal cases on record in North County against Peter Karzis of the same age, 76. After the video of Karzis engaged in apparently lewd conduct went viral on social media, one outraged resident passed out flyers to neighboring business owners. The flyer warned that unwelcome actions by Karzis might be affecting other businesses in the area, since some people posted on social media that they were avoiding the area near Karzis' store. The flyer urged business owners to share their concerns at the next La Mesa City Council meeting. On Monday, January 20th, multiple news organizations sent reporters with cameras to try and speak with Karzis about the allegations against him, and an altercation ensued. Witnesses have indicated Karzis first went after a female reporter from Univision, breaking her camera. Photos on social media show multiple pieces broken off the camera, scattered across the street. Karzis then chased and repeatedly pushed another photographer with the video camera, then turned around and struck yet a third journalist, Dan Plant of KUSI, in the face, drawing blood. Throughout the rampage, Karzis is heard on videos repeatedly cursing at the reporters, then laughing before running into his store and locking the door. By the time police arrived, Karzis was gone, presumably escaping out a back door. He was arrested the next morning in San Diego. Anyone with information regarding these cases is asked to call La Mesa Police at 619-667-1400. Hundreds of comments have been posted on social media voicing offense at the behavior of Karzis, with some speculating he could be suffering from dementia, mental illness, or substance abuse. Lieutenant Runge said police cannot comment on a suspect's mental state, but did confirm that Karzis was undergoing a medical evaluation shortly after his arrest. At least one community member remembers a time when Karzis seemed far different. Kelly Halleweis posted on Facebook that Karzis' behavior has drastically changed over the last few years, and recalled that for years, Karzis helped a homeless man get off the streets, offering him clean clothes, a place to shower, and ultimately getting him into a safe home where he could die with dignity and not be on the streets. The Peter today is not the Peter of a few years ago. Something's wrong, Halleweis concludes, adding, I am hopeful he gets the help he needs. Reporting for East County Magazine, on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz. Authorities have announced a $10,000 reward for information to help find Elijah Diaz, known as Bear, a member of the Barona Band of Mission Indians who vanished under suspicious circumstances in August 2015. Bear was 20 years old at the time and ill from diabetes. Last year, East County Magazine interviewed his mother, Leilani Jo Thompson. She told us Bear was about to get his foot amputated. He couldn't walk, she said, adding that her son had been in a wheelchair until just days before he disappeared. He weighed only 110 pounds and could not have left home on his own, according to his mother. He was last seen by his mother when she dropped him off at his home on Joey Avenue near North Mollison and Interstate 8 in El Cajon on August 29, 2015, around 10 p.m. His crutches, backpack, TV, a comforter, and sheets were missing, along with contents of a safe, including cash. Bear had only a 2-week supply of insulin when he vanished. His cell phone charger was left behind, and he never picked up his paycheck. His cell phone was turned off on August 30th, the morning his mother reported him missing. Officially, investigators remain unsure whether Bear left voluntarily or was a victim of a kidnapping, robbery, or other crime. But his family is convinced that Bear was taken against his will. Since he vanished, there have been no sightings or contacts from Bear to friends or relatives. There has been no activity on his banking or social media accounts, according to police. His DNA has been entered into the NameUs database, which can help identify persons found unconscious, with memory loss, or dead. But there have been no matches. His family hopes someone will come forward with information to help them learn what happened to Elijah Bear Diaz. I believe we'll get an answer someday. Somebody knows, his mother concludes. If you have information about this missing young man, please contact the El Cajon Police Department at 619-579-3311. You can also visit the Bring Bear Diaz Home page on Facebook. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
An executive order issued in September by President Donald Trump requires approval from states, counties, and cities to continue to accept refugees and federal funds to help these newcomers coming to America who are fleeing war, persecution, natural disasters, or violence in their homelands. On January 14th, San Diego County Board of Supervisors took up the matter. San Diego has been an official federal refugee resettlement site since the end of the Vietnam War in 1975. The city is now one of the largest resettlement sites in the nation, taking in over 24,000 refugees in the past decade, including many families with children. The region receives $7.6 million a year in federal funding to help refugees, including $4 million to the county's Health and Human Services Agency. Four of the nine national refugee resettlement agencies are located in San Diego, providing help for the newcomers to become productive members of society. That support includes medical care, English language skills, help with housing, job training, small business development, and aid to school districts with large refugee student populations, including districts in East County. All of that could have screeched to a halt if supervisors had voted against a proposal to approve continuing refugee resettlement in our region and acceptance of future federal funds for that purpose. 31 speakers spoke in favor, with no one speaking against. Staff pointed out that if funding were eliminated, refugees settled in other states or cities could still relocate to San Diego to be near family, but support services could vanish or be diminished. Even before the first speaker, Chairman Greg Cox and other supervisors voiced unwavering support for the measure, which passed unanimously by a 5-0 vote. Supervisor Diane Jacobs stated, "We welcome the refugees," but she noted that an influx of refugees from Iraq settling in East County has also strained resources on Grossmont Hospital, the Grossmont Cuyamaca Community College District, Grossmont Union High School District, and Cajon Valley Union School District. "We don't get enough money," said Jacob, who later proposed an amendment adopted to direct staff to aggressively seek additional funding to supplement the federal money. Supervisor Kristen Gaspar voiced support to give people their life back before the public testimony. Speakers included faith leaders, including pastors of churches in Santee and San Carlos, as well as representatives from the American Civil Liberties Union, League of Women Voters, refugee resettlement agencies such as Catholic Charities, and the International Rescue Committee, and people who came here as refugees, seeking safety and a better way of life for their families. Marie Raftery, with Jewish Family Service, said helping refugees also helps community members, providing aid, who have demonstrated are better angels. Kathy Anderson, with Survivors of Torture International, said her group has helped bear witness to the resiliency of refugees and how much they contribute to our communities. An Afghan immigrant living in East County noted that Trump has reduced the number of refugees admitted into the U.S. from 110,000 2 years ago to just 18,000 this year, the lowest number in history, at a time when the refugee crisis is growing around the world. This is a shame and goes against the fabric of our country, the immigrant said. After the public comments, Supervisor Cox noted that many refugees have gone through a long federal vetting process, which includes background checks, often surviving refugee camps in other countries. He said, "This is our responsibility in San Diego, to provide critical services to help them build productive lives here." Supervisor Nathan Fletcher spoke last, thanking his colleagues on the Board of Supervisors and all who came to voice support for the refugees. "The reason we are here today is that the Trump administration is attempting to divide communities," he said. "There was no need for the executive order." He indicated that refugee resettlement has been working for decades under both Republican and Democratic administrations. Fletcher said he has lived around the world, including in Iraq, Cambodia, South America, and Africa. He now lives in City Heights, a diverse community. "Refugees make us who we are, as Americans," he continued, adding, "It's an issue of humanity. It's an issue of morality. It's an issue of faith." He noted that a year ago, we saw very divided efforts regarding asylum seekers, then pointed out that seeking asylum is the first step towards becoming a refugee. "I am grateful in San Diego that this is an exercise in unity. It sends a powerful message," Supervisor Fletcher concluded. As the unanimous bipartisan vote was announced, applause filled the San Diego County Supervisors' hearing room, where humanity and compassion triumphed over the politics of hate and division. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is John Fisteer with a health report. Two cactus mice collected in routine monitoring in Santee and Valley Center have tested positive for hantavirus, marking the first appearance in San Diego County in 2020 of the potentially deadly virus. There is no cure or vaccine for hantavirus, which can cause deadly infections in people. Hantavirus is common in San Diego County. Last year, 42 rodents collected in routine trapping tested positive for hantavirus. Fortunately, people are unlikely to be exposed to the virus because its main carriers, wild rodents, and particularly wild mice, prefer to live away from people. County officials are warning people to be careful when cleaning up homes, garages, sheds, cabins, or other buildings. If you find rodent droppings or other signs that mice or rats have been present, do not sweep or vacuum, since you can inhale the virus and become ill. Instead, use wet cleaning methods. First, ventilate the area by opening doors and windows for at least 30 minutes. Wear rubber gloves and spray a 10% bleach solution or other disinfectant onto the area and let it stand at least 15 minutes. Then clean with a sponge or mop soaked in disinfectant. Place debris and any dead rodents into two plastic bags, then seal and put in the trash. Wash gloves in bleach, followed by soap and water. Then dispose of the gloves too, using the same double bag method. Wash your hands thoroughly with soap and water after you finish cleaning up. Seal up all external holes larger than a dime in your home, garage, shed, or other buildings to prevent rodents from getting in. Symptoms of hantavirus may appear between 1 and 6 weeks after exposure to rodents or rodent droppings. Early symptoms include severe muscle aches, chills and fever, headache or dizziness, coughing or trouble breathing, nausea, vomiting, or stomach pain, and low blood pressure. Severe cases may result in respiratory failure, and in 36% of cases, a death. If you experience any of these symptoms after exposure to rodents or cleaning up after a rodent infestation, contact your doctor immediately. Although there is no cure for hantavirus, prompt treatment of some symptoms can be life-saving. For more information, you can contact the County Department of Environmental Health at 858-694-2888. That's 858-694-2888.
Patrons of the Santee Library can now borrow small laptop computers through a new high-tech dispensing machine that was funded by the Friends of the Santee Library. The kiosk is available to use free to anyone with a library card. An official ribbon cutting on January 13th celebrated the opening. Chris Miller, Vice President of the Friends of the Santee Library, said her group provided about $38,000 towards the purchase of the kiosk, while the County of San Diego, which operates the library, put up around $24,000 to pay for the laptop computers and the maintenance cost. The machine has 12 laptops which can be used anywhere in the library. The laptops connect to a Wi-Fi system at UCSD Supercomputer Center, providing high speeds of 1 gigabyte per second. It's only the third library in the county system of 33 libraries to get the kiosk made by DTech Inc. Cheryl Cosart, Santee's library manager, said even though the kiosk wasn't yet publicized, it got 31 borrowings over its first 10-day period. The laptops are helpful for people who may not have computers at home, but come to the library to check out news, look for jobs, do schoolwork, or play video games online. A man using a regular computer while talking loudly on his cell phone was asked by Cosart to take out a laptop and go into an unused conference room to avoid disturbing other patrons. He did so satisfied with the solution, she said. The laptop kiosk is an effort to make the most of the small library's limited space, since current desktop PCs are often in use due to high demand. Advocates for a new library say the county's current leased facility on Carlton Hills Boulevard, with about 9,000 square feet, is woefully inadequate for a city of about 58,000 residents. They say a city the size of Santee should have a library of at least 22,000 square feet. Friends of the Library's efforts to fundraise for a new library now seem like a distant pipe dream, since the City Council recently voted to abandon plans for a library in the town center and instead pursue negotiations to build a hotel on the site. Mayor John Minto has said he has a plan for a combined community center and library, but has declined to provide details or the location. Miller said the failure of the council to make libraries and other services a priority is disappointing. Quote, "It's too bad our city council doesn't have the forethought to understand that the city needs services, including a new library, a senior center, and a teen center," she said. As an incorporated city, Santee would have to finance construction of any new library, though the county generally pays for equipment and maintenance. So far, Santee City Council has not viewed a new library as a priority, much to the dismay of library patrons. But for now, the new laptop kiosks are expanding opportunities online at Santee's Little Library. Reporting for East County Magazine in Santee, this is Jonathan Goetz.
This is Miriam Raftery with an education report. The Cajon Valley Union School District, which currently serves elementary and middle school students, wants to convert its Bostonia Language Academy into a new charter high school. But Cajon Valley's plans to open a high school within the boundaries controlled by the Grossmont Union High School District has drawn strong opposition from Grossmont. According to the charter application, the Bostonia Global Academy would serve 1,275 high school students with a bilingual, globally focused, interest-based experience, similar to that already offered at Bostonia Language Academy for younger students. Dr. David Miyashiro, Cajon Valley's superintendent, says the new school would help students explore internships, associate degrees, college credits, and certifications. At the Cajon Valley District's school board meeting on January 17th, Dr. Miyashiro told board members that this charter school process began several years ago, but was put on pause while the district pursued its World of Work curriculum. The idea was revived by Miyashiro when Bostonia's principal, Neryl Winter, approached him to ask if the charter would be possible. If approved by the board and ultimately the state, the new charter school would be funded by New Schools Venture Fund and the state of California's official charter startup fund, that's taxpayer money, as well as other education-oriented philanthropies. But Miyashiro's proposal has sparked the ire of Grossmont's superintendent, Dr. Tim Glover, who slammed the process in heated testimony that he delivered to the Cajon Valley Board. Dr. Glover told trustees that he did not know about the petition until 24 hours before the hearing. He added, "Furthermore, I've heard that it's been communicated that Grossmont High School District was fully aware of this charter petition. I need to say, this is simply not true." Grossmont's superintendent also faulted Cajon Valley for its rogue actions in rushing the process without adequate input from all stakeholders. He noted that the process for approving charters normally requires a public hearing followed by 30 days for staff to review the petition and make recommendations to approve or deny it. "Where are the supporting signatures for this petition?" he asked, also questioning why detailed budgets and comprehensive descriptions of special education programs were not included. Dr. Glover also questioned whether the hasty charter proposal had been vetted for compliance requirements by any lawyers or by the County Office of Education's charter office. "Finally, and perhaps most importantly," Dr. Glover testified, "I wonder about the legal and moral implications of Cajon Valley initiating a charter school to serve students in grades 9 through 12 and doing that within the Grossmont Union High School district boundaries." Dr. Glover asked the Cajon Valley Board to pause consideration of the Bostonia charter proposal. "Don't rush into this action, and really, truly engage stakeholders to be involved in the process," he concluded. However, the Cajon Valley School Board ignored Glover's plea, voting 4-1 to approve the charter anyway. Trustee Jill Barto was the only dissenter to vote no. She said that while she supports a charter high school in the Cajon Valley District, she called on her fellow board members to follow Dr. Glover's advice to push the pause button on the petition for full public input. The Grossmont Union High School District operates 18 high schools in East County and supports two charter high schools, Helix and Steel Canyon. But Grossmont has also recently filed lawsuits to shut down other charter schools that the district contended were operating without Grossmont's permission, raising the specter of yet more litigation against the ever-controversial Cajon Valley Union School District for defying Grossmont and pushing forward with an unauthorized charter proposal.
This is Jonathan Goetz with a local government report from La Mesa. At its first meeting of the new year on January 14th, La Mesa Mayor Mark Garapastafis presented his State of the City address. He pointed out that the city continued to work towards its Climate Action Plan goals by embracing community choice aggregation and becoming a founding member of the San Diego Community Power Joint Powers Authority. He stated the CCA will eventually account for 32% of the city's anticipated greenhouse gas reduction, or a path to 100% renewable energy. Next up, the council took testimony from residents on a proposal to expand the number of areas where ownership of chickens is allowed to include all residential zones. Testimony included a resident who made the case to keep his beloved poultry pets, Thelma and Louise, as well as Lucy and Ethel. The resolution passed unanimously. Residents can now own anywhere from 3 to 20 chickens, depending on lot size. The ordinance also includes specifications for setbacks and coop size, among other details, to protect the health and well-being of poultry, residents, and neighbors. In other business, council unanimously voted to expand restrictions on smoking. Smoking was already illegal in public parks and civic buildings in La Mesa. The new ordinance prohibits smoking on streets and sidewalks and at open workplaces. The ban does not apply to private homes or indoor businesses. However, the ban exempts tobacco shops, smokers' lounges, and hookah bars, as well as 20% of rooms in hotels and motels. The new ordinance also grandfathers in restaurants and bars if they've been operating an outdoor dining or smoking facility for at least 60 days before the ordinance, provided the spaces don't encroach on city property or rights-of-way. Most residents who went on the record approved of the measure, with only one person who spoke in opposition. Some restaurant and bar owners who had previously raised objections had worked with city staff to revise the ordinance language and did not testify at the January 14th meeting. American Cancer Society Government Relations Director Linda Barbour, a resident of La Mesa, told East County Magazine that there is no safe level of exposure from secondhand smoke. She praised La Mesa for reducing health risks in the city, stating, "People now have the ability to enjoy a smoke-free environment wherever they live and work in La Mesa."
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County features East County Dining Club's Flamenco Music and Spanish Tapas Night at the Space Bar Cafe and Wine Bar in La Mesa, benefiting our own East County magazine.
Other events coming up include Hawk Watch in Ramona,
a powwow at Cuyamaca College,
well-known performers at the Magnolia Center in El Cajon, Restaurant Month in Julian, bird watching in Lakeside, a Chapman Stick concert at Mission Trails Church, trivia nights at Wineworks in La Mesa, and Agatha Christie's murder mystery, The Hollow, on stage at Lamplighters in La Mesa.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
East County Dining Club invites you to savor Spanish-style tapas, paella, and a live flamenco show on Thursday, January 30th at the Space Bar Cafe and Wine Bar in La Mesa. The restaurant will donate 20% of the event's proceeds to benefit our own East County Magazine nonprofit news in the public interest. The event begins with happy hour at 6 p.m., followed by dinner and the flamenco music show at 7 p.m. Reservations are required. To RSVP, order your entree, and reserve space, you can call 619-698-7617 or email editor@eastcountymagazine.org. The delicious details are also available on our website at eastcountymagazine.org.
Every Saturday in January and February, Hawk Watch will be presented at the Beegent Ranch in the Ramona Grasslands Preserve. The event starts at 10 a.m., but arrival at 9:30 is recommended. Hawk Watch is organized by the Wildlife Research Institute and includes up-close looks at falcons and other raptors with wildlife biologists and a seated show, as well as an option for later roadside observations along a 2-mile paved road where you may see a variety of other birds of prey, including eagles. Volunteers with high-powered telescopes will be on hand to enhance your viewing enjoyment. You can find more information at wildlife-research.org/hawkwatch.
Native American history and culture will be celebrated when tribes from across the West congregate at Cuyamaca College's 6th annual powwow on Saturday, February 1st. The powwow starts at 9:30 a.m. with a traditional blessing, followed by the Asha'atakuk bird singers at 10 a.m., gourd dancing at 11 a.m. and grand entry at noon. The celebration continues until 8 p.m., and vendors will also be selling Native American arts and crafts, fry bread, and Indian tacos. The powwow takes place on the lawn in front of the Communication Arts Center at Cuyamaca College. For more information, you can visit cuyamaca.edu.
The Magnolia Center, formerly known as the East County Performing Arts Center, has a variety of shows coming up in the next few weeks. Upcoming performances include Sinbad, ranked by Comedy Central among the 100 top stand-up comedians of all time, Colin Hay, former singer-songwriter with the band Men at Work, and Ben Rector, Emmy-nominated singer, songwriter, and instrumentalist who has been featured on Conan, The Today Show, Jimmy Kimmel, and other national TV shows. For tickets and a full lineup, you can visit MagnoliaSanDiego.com.
Many restaurants in and around Julian are celebrating California Restaurant Month throughout January with their own specials and surprises. Find details at visitjulian.com and click on the Restaurant Week link to view all of the delicious options.
El Monte County Park in Lakeside is a birding hotspot with an impressive array of birds. On February 1st, from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m., you're invited to join Ranger Arnold, an experienced birder, to catch those winged creatures in action during an easy 2-hour walk through the park before the gates open to the public. Binoculars and cameras are encouraged.
On February 9th, local musician Tom Greisgrapper will be performing at 3 p.m. at the Mission Trails Church on an unusual instrument. The Chapman stick looks like a wide guitar neck without the guitar body. It has 12 strings, 6 guitar strings, and 6 bass strings that are tapped rather than plucked. Griesgraber is one of the world's most respected performers on the stick. He has toured the US and Europe along with the drummer, providing the opening act for hosts of well-known musicians. He has also released 7 CDs. His music blends jazz, rock, pop, and musical textures of the world.
Wineworks in La Mesa invites you to test your knowledge, vie for prizes, and make new friends at trivia nights held every Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. For more information, you can visit lamesawineworks.com.
Lamplighters Theater in La Mesa will present Agatha Christie's murder mystery, The Hollow, February 28th through March 29th. An unhappy game of romantic follow the leader explodes into murder one weekend at The Hollow. Dr. Christow, the Harley Street Lothario, is at the center of the trouble when, assembled in one place, we find his wife, his mistress, his former lover, and other guests. As the list of romantic association grows, so does the list of potential suspects when Dr. Christow is shot dead. Nearly everyone has a motive, but only one of them did the deed. Find tickets and details at lamplighterslamesa.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in the calendar and events section at our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back soon with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County!
If you need help with your taxes, the AARP Tax Aid Program can help. They're offering free tax preparation and e-filing for senior citizens, low-income residents, and others in need in the East County area. Tax sites will be open the week of February 3rd and continue until April 15th. The AARP Tax Aid Program will be available at the following locations: the El Cajon Library, College Avenue Senior Center, Alpine Senior Center, La Mesa Adult Enrichment Center, and Edgemoor Hospital. Two locations that have offered this service in the past, Lemon Grove Senior Center and the Salvation Army, will not be open this year. Past clients at these two sites are welcome to make an appointment at any of the other locations.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show. A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org.